what I would like to do before I get into the overview of what we're going to do in the next hour and 20 minutes or so is give you some information about the instructions for how to ask questions, how to send comments, how to mute, unmute your line, or how that will be handled. So I've asked Rebecca Livesey with the Ombudsman Resource Center to give us the ins and outs of how to deal with the technology that we have.
Sure. Thanks, Sarah. So currently everyone is on mute right now to minimize background noise. If you have a question at all during the presentation and you're joining us in the webinar, please either use the raise your hand feature, or if you want to go ahead and chat your question in the chat box, we'll make sure it gets answered. At certain points of the presentation, we will instruct you how to unmute your line so you may also participate in dialogue.
Okay, Becca, that's the only information at this point?
That's what I have right now. Everyone should be in mute mode at this point. And if you have any questions, just feel free to go ahead and put them in the chat box.
And some of you have already let us know that you hear a beeping sound on the phone. That's because other people are joining the call. And so it's just a beep every time somebody else connects. And I really don't think there's a way that we can keep that from happening. So sorry about that. If nothing else, you can consider it as a way to keep from taking an afternoon nap. All right. What we are planning to do today is try to make this as interactive as possible. This is kind of a precursor to a session that we're going to have at the Consumer Voice Annual Meeting that I'll mention at the end of the call. We will begin by going over the NORS information. We have two guest speakers that I'm just really pleased to have join us. One is Louise Ryan, who's the Ombudsman Specialist at the Administration on Aging. So Louise will give us some information about the Administration on Aging's perspective on this training and NORS and kind of where it's going and their expectations. The other special presenter is Shelley Hitt, who's the Colorado State Ombudsman and chair of the NASOF WINC Committee. Shelley's going to give us just a few minutes of information about the WINC's involvement and how we got to where we are today, what to do in the future, and what to do if you have questions that you think really need some clarification in terms of what box to check in the NORS codes. I've recruited Amity with the Ombudsman Resource Center to help us a little bit. After Louise and Shelley speak, then we're going to go through the NORS 1 module. And you will all get some opportunities to ask questions, give comments, and I'm hoping to move right along so we have a good 30 minutes or at least 25 minutes on the call today for you to ask questions, not only about something that maybe isn't clear as we go through the answers, but questions that you have in situations related to this covering case, complaint, consultation. While we have the experts on the line, you can just ask those questions, and we'll see what we can do with them today. So without any further ado, I will move to the first slide. Basically, you all are backed up. I jumped ahead. What we have is that I've just given you the purpose of the training today to improve consistency in our reporting. We want to provide clarifying information about case, complaint, and consultation by the practice application, which is the quiz that I hope you have all taken. And if you've taken it five times before, I hope you took it again before today's call. We want to talk about the whys behind the answers, discuss the answers or anything else. That's what I said. I hope we have 25, 30 minutes to talk about. And then to provide some information about the process for obtaining a vetted response when questions arise in the future. So we don't have 53 different programs, state programs, coming up with their own ideas about whether it's case consultation or none of the above or complaint. There's a process that's been set up that you can funnel that in, and we will try to come up with consistent responses and share those with everyone. So you'll hear about that on the call. bottom line, for some people who are really new to this whole system, wanted just a quick reminder that the Older Americans Act requires states to collect ombudsman complaint data and for the state ombudsman to report aggregate data to the Administration on Aging. In the fiscal year 1995, AOA implemented an ombudsman complaint reporting system called the National Ombudsman Reporting System, or NORS. And for those of us who have been around since before then, we can tell you about how many battles there were about what items to include in NORS. And every 3 years since then, when it's been up for renewal, there have been minor skirmishes about what's too much, what's not enough, what individual states want to collect that's outside of the NORS data, and why we have what we have today. But nevertheless, that's just kind of a quick update that NORS and the training, the complaint reporting system, are basically required, and it's required to be consistent to give us some rough indication about what's going on across the country, especially related to long-term care residents. As I mentioned previously, Louise Ryan is going to take about 5 minutes and give us some information from AOA's perspective about this NORS training, Module 1, as well as the bigger broad brush approach to NORS. Louise, welcome to the call.
Thank you, Sarah, and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining the call. I see we have some new people and some seasoned, experienced people, and I think that will help make this a good session. And just for those of you who don't know me, I'm new to the Administration on Aging. I started in July as the Ombudsman Program Specialist. And prior to that, I was the Washington State Long-Term Care Ombudsman. I've learned a lot over the years about ombudsman data and collection and the challenges, et cetera, that you all experience. But just to give you some big picture AOA perspective, AOA does use the NORS data. We depend on the data for several things. One of the important things is for the budget justification. So every year the NORS data is used to help justify the funding, and also when we can, you know, try to ask for increased funding. Some of that data is also used to look at what are the trends going on. So, for instance, there is a, you know, growing work in our non-nursing home settings, our assisted living or adult residential care, whatever you call them, and there's an incredible growth in that area. So that's an area where we've tried to point out that, you know, we need additional resources. Whether that happens or not is, you know, up for debate at this point in time. But that is one way that the data is used. It also is used to inform AOA on, you know, what are the trends. And I've really been looking at the 2010 data in depth, at the numbers, and also, you know, numbers are important, and also the narratives that are sent in, because they really create a very whole picture of what's going on in the country and the trends that are emerging around issues related to Medicaid and accessing Medicaid benefits, guardianship issues, financial exploitation, care issues, but also things that are emerging around assistance to special populations, persons with mental illness or persons with dementia and their particular needs. So all those things kind of come through in the reports that states submit to the Administration on Aging. So your numbers, the case numbers, the complaint numbers, it becomes very important that we are speaking the same language when we talk about a case and a complaint and a consultation. And so the more consistent we can be and the better understanding we have of what we're collecting helps to make our data stronger. In the past, there has been some review of our data by the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, and the Office of Inspector General, And also there's a program evaluation shop within Health and Human Services that looked at our data, and kind of a recurring theme of feedback is that we need to be consistent, and ombudsmen need to, be trained on these definitions. And so it's been several years since we've had training, so we're getting back into the training mode so that we can help to make sure that you understand what it means to talk about a case complaint consultation, and that also that you in turn help your peers in your state to also receive this training. So if you're a state ombudsman, that means setting up plans to train your regional ombudsman, if you have staff or volunteers, to make sure they have this training. So, you know, there's the goal that you will in turn use these materials to work within your state. And I think a couple other things I will mention is just as you can to look at your state and how can you make sure that you're keeping on top of your data management in terms of questions to ask yourself. Do my staff and I routinely enter our data? Those things help keep you more consistent. Do we review the data for accuracy? Do we have routine training for staff and volunteers? Do we use data as a program management tool or to help inform our systems advocacy? So those are just some things you can think about or ask yourself. And the Ombudsman Resource Center website has a lot of good examples of states that have worked out how to do their training routinely or how to use data for program management or systems advocacy. There's resources on the Ombudsman Center website that would be helpful, I think, to take a look at if you want to explore that some more. If you want to look at the 2010 ombudsman data, it is on the AOA website at aoa.gov, and you have to look under the AOA programs for long-term care ombudsman, and then within that page down at the bottom is a link to the data. And then the future of NORS, the Administration on Aging would like to revise some of our methods of what we collect, of what ombudsmen collect, I should say. In part, that is coming from recommendations from the Assistant Secretary on Program and Evaluation report. And in looking at the ombudsman data in the more the big picture, what we want to try to show down the road is how ombudsmen are, we say these things, but how do we prove it through data? How do ombudsmen prevent negative outcomes? How do ombudsmen prevent abuse? Or how do ombudsmen save residents money, say, by preventing financial exploitation? So those are things we might want to try to figure out down the road. How can we answer some of those questions in a quantifiable way? So there will be a NORS revision. We'll start to work on that end of this year, into next year. It'll be a process, and certainly because everybody's invested a lot in their current software, we're not going to be dismantling and starting from scratch, but we will be looking at, are there other kinds of practical questions that we can ask and collect data on that we're not doing now? Are there questions that we ask now or things that AOA wants reported now that really aren't helpful? And maybe even looking at, is there some simplification that we can do in this data collection process? So those are some of the, I think, questions we'll be tackling with. And it will be a process. There will be involvement by ombudsmen. And, right now it's more just the beginning steps of thinking, researching, asking questions that we want answers to. So I think that's all I have to say for now. And certainly if there's questions that come up, I'd be happy to answer them. So thank you.
Thank you, Louise. You've given us a lot to think about, and I'm sure there are tons of questions about some of what you just said. But I do appreciate you for giving us a clue about the importance of consistency and what's happening with the data right now that certainly has a bigger ripple impact on the program, as well as what we may expect coming up in the future. What I'd like to do is ask Shelley Hitt to give us a little bit of background and about these NORS modules and the involvement and participation of state and local ombudsmen, as well as what you do if you have areas that you would like more clarification on. So, Shelley, if you'll take about 5 minutes and give that to us, please, then we will move ahead into the part one training.
Thank you, Sarah. Hello to all my colleagues. As the current chairperson of the WINC, the Work Group to Improve NORS Consistency, or as I often think of it, why is NORS so confusing? I want to tell you a little bit about our work group. It was started years ago by state ombudsmen much wiser and more experienced than me, Jackie Majoras, Joe Rodriguez, Louise Ryan, and many others, to begin to try and understand and answer these confusing questions about how and where to code our work. And that group, initial group, was heavily involved, I believe, in developing the original NORS training modules, which we are talking about today. As you know, as ombudsman, when you begin to do training with your own staff or even have a discussion within your state on an issue such as the one we are discussing today, is it a case or a consult or something else or nothing, you uncover disagreements and misunderstandings even within your own staff about how to code things. In fact, I told Sarah this week that the first NORS training I did about 6 months after I started as state ombudsman was an absolute train wreck. Some of the ombudsmen who were part of that training are on this call today, and I'm sure they're smiling at this moment. But we were all more confused at the end of the day than when we started, and I knew I needed major help and an intervention. So I became part of the WINC. And the WINC is really a subcommittee of the NASOP Data Committee. And WINC and AOA realize that when the differences and inconsistencies that we have within our state are multiplied across the 53 programs, our data is less reliable and less useful. So the WINC was resurrected really about 2 years ago and currently has 7 state, 7 local ombudsmen, and 3 what I call the ex officio members, Louise Ryan, Sarah Hunt, and Lori Smetanka. To date, the NORS or the WINC group has identified training needs related to NORS, helped formulate the content of this webinar, and will be working on the future webinars, in particular by reviewing the modules for glaring inconsistencies or confusing portions of the modules. We're working with Sarah and Lori and others on the Train the Trainer session for the Consumer Voice Conference, and hopefully even some more training at the NASOP annual meeting in Salt Lake. However, the most important work that we do, we believe, is to develop answers to those tough questions that state and local ombudsmen bring to us about NORS coding. And we use a process that we believe is thorough, well-vetted, if you will, can be recorded and codified somewhere, and that will be accessible to all ombudsmen and blessed by AOA. We are not, however, most of the time, fast. We often find that when we're asked one question, 3 more sort of rise up in that discussion. And in our effort to be conscientious and clear in our response, that takes some time. Discussion on any one issue or question could take an hour or more. You have to remember that these are ombudsmen who are stubborn, opinionated, and outspoken, so we have very lively discussions. We have 90-minute monthly calls. In addition to that, we do lots of work by email, and committee members are assigned questions to research and report back the following month with whatever authority they have uncovered to support their analysis and identifying the rationale for the answer they've developed if that's needed. And if all goes well, we reach a consensus. And then the ombudsman who submitted the question will get a response from me or another committee member as soon as humanly possible. But remember, my warning, we are not fast. Lori has agreed that NORC can find a home for our answers on the center website. So what we will have is the question and answer with the authority that's used to support that answer and any rationale if needed. as of today, we probably only have about two or three questions that have come to us that have gone through the process and are ready to be put up on the website. But we have lots more in the queue that are working their way through our WINC process. Ultimately, we hope that all that information will be organized and searchable for all of you who need a quick answer. And Louise has indicated that that information will probably have a home someday as well on the AOA data community. As a quick note, you may get a gentle rebuke if you send out sort of an informal NORS consistency type question to a small network of your friends to get a quick answer. Because what ends up happening is then we have half a dozen sort of different interpretations out there that we're working with and operating on, and it undermines the larger goal to get one set of answers that we can all use and rely on. And as Louise pointed out to us, if it's been confusing or inconsistent for a number of years, we probably can wait another month or so to get a consistent, conscientious, vetted answer. So for now, for anyone who has questions about NORS, not Ombuds Manager or ORT or all the other many components of data, but about NORS coding and consistency, we ask that you email me and I will get that question out to the WINC committee. Ask if you can before you really need an answer so we can get it to you to meet your purposes. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. Certainly today, if you, after this webinar, you are likely to maybe still have some additional questions or something that's not clear, feel free to email me as the chair of the WINC and we'll work it through our committee. My email address and phone number is on the slide. So I look forward to hearing from y'all. Thanks.
Thank you, Shelley, and thanks for your honesty about how complicated some of this can be when it's actually intended to be to add clarity and be a relatively simple kind of instrument to understand. What I'd like to do is move into the quiz part of the presentation and just review some of the basics. Number one, the three C's. What are the basic principles? And I moved past where I wanted to be, so let me see if I can go back. Okay, what is a case? Well, a case is an inquiry that's brought to or initiated by the ombudsman on behalf of a resident or a group of residents. So how clear is that? The other is, basically, it can be an ombudsman-initiated situation or case, or it can be something that's brought to the ombudsman. It involves one or more complaints, which requires opening a case and includes ombudsman investigation, strategy to resolve, and follow-up. One of the tweaks that the WINC made to this is including the current NORS definition of case right here in the Part 1 training. So you see this complaint, but a case has complaint component, but it also means the ombudsman has to take some action to investigate, have some basic strategy to resolve and follow up. And then you see some caveats there in the next few little pieces, the bullet points, that basically say that you can, the ombudsman and another agency are both actively involved in investigation resolution. It can also be a case because the ombudsman and the other agency, so the ombudsman's actually involved in that investigation process and the resolution. It's more than a referral. And another key tip is the number of cases is equal to the number of complainants. However, one or more people jointly filing a complaint count as one complainant. So what's a complaint? Complaint is a concern that's brought to or initiated by ombudsman for investigation and action on behalf of one or more residents and relating to the health, safety, welfare rights of a resident. So basically, anything relating to residents could conceivably be a complaint. And the tip is one or more complaints constitutes a case, but you cannot have a case if you don't have a complaint. So the complaints are the things that trigger a potential case. The third one that we want to highlight on the three C's is consultation. So what is a consultation? It's providing information and assistance to an individual or to a facility. It does not involve investigating and working to resolve complaints, so therefore it is not a case. If an ombudsman refers someone with a concern to another agency and is not actively involved in investigating and working to resolve the problem, it is not an ombudsman case or complaint. And sometimes I find that when I or others get kind of bogged down in which of the three C's it is, what to call it, what category it fits in, it's very helpful to pull out the principles and actually read them again and try to bring some clarity to whatever the situation is. So if you will pull out your quizzes, we're going to run through those and give you the answers and talk about why the answer is the answer. And then there will be opportunities for you to ask questions and then to bring up other issues as well. So the first question, Shelley, would you read that for us, please?
A woman calls asking for information on care planning and how to select a nursing home for her mother.
So those of you who are tuned into the webinar, would you just give us your results? Is it a case or a consultation or neither? You see a poll open right there. Just plug in your response. We're going to take just a few seconds. Okay, just about everybody so far says that it's a consultation. A few people say it's neither. And I really wish when we were conducting this training in person, it'd be nice if we had all those little handheld devices so you could just see it up on the screen like you do here or on some of the quiz shows. So let's see what the answer is. It is one consultation to an individual. And the key is the woman's asking for information and how to select a nursing home. Okay, Amity, would you read the next one, please?
You visit Mrs. Jones, who tells you they are still bringing her pureed food, even though her doctor said she could start eating regular food. You notice her call bell is broken. She indicates she would appreciate your assistance in resolving these problems. You speak to the DON about the call bell, and she promptly fixes the bell. You attempt to talk to the dietitian about the pureed food, but she is not available until the next morning. You leave Mrs. Jones, but tell her that you will check back with the dietitian and will follow up with her on the results to ensure that the call bell is still functional.
Great. Thank you. So, case, consultation, or neither? Give us your quick responses. Okay, people think this is a case by an overwhelming majority. And you're correct. It's one case with two complaints, and we certainly didn't poll you for all the different things that the quiz asks you to identify. The complaints are pureed food and the broken call light. You can't close the case until both complaints are taken care of and have a disposition. The complainant is Mrs. Jones, who's the resident. Now, why is Mrs. Jones the complainant when you, the ombudsman, noticed the call bell or call light and brought it to her attention? It's Mrs. Jones is the complainant, the resident, because it's still her case, and she said, yes, work on it. I'd like you to do something about it for me. So she's the complainant once she says, yes, move it forward. Is the call bell a complaint or a request? How do you decide? The key tip here in any situation is the ombudsman responding to concern and facilitating communication just between the staff and the resident without really taking action, doing follow-up, making sure there's some strategy to resolve it? If so, the ombudsman is just a messenger, so it would not be a complaint. But if the ombudsman has to take some steps to try to verify that, yes, the call light's broken, there's a plan to get it fixed, and then follow up and make sure that it's taken care of, then it would be a complaint and you would open a case. Okay, the third one. Shelley?
A CNA approaches you about a labor dispute in the facility. She asks you to intervene with management on behalf of the staff, which is threatening to strike if they don't get health coverage.
Okay. So what is this, case, consultation, or neither? Okay, the most responses by an overwhelming majority are neither. And that's right. Why not? Because it's not made by or on behalf of a resident or residents. If you provide information or suggestions, it could be counted as a consultation to a facility staff person. But the little scenario that you have doesn't really say for sure what you do. So, therefore, it's neither at this point in time. If you had done a lot of talking with the staff person about what to do, then it could be a consultation. If you just said, we don't deal with that, then it's not a case and not a consultation. This can get into a discussion around how much information would be appropriate for an ombudsman to give if you encountered this situation, and how you would go about giving that information, if any, or just clarifying the role of the ombudsman. So that's what this is. It could be maybe a consultation, but I think you would want to talk about that in a training session in terms of what really is appropriate for the role of the ombudsman and what kinds of information to provide. Sometimes people get a little confused about this because potentially the residents are impacted. If there is a strike and there's not coverage and no provisions made for meeting the needs of the resident, then it could impact residents. However, on the face of it, what the CNA is bringing to you is asking you to be an ombudsman for the CNAs and to get involved in the labor dispute. And that's not the role of the ombudsman. So that's that little piece of information. I see that we had a question about the previous response, so we'll go back to that one, and then we'll jump ahead to number four. The question was about the call light. And if the resident had refused permission and said that, no, she really didn't want you to do anything about it, would that be something that an ombudsman would open a case as an ombudsman-initiated complaint? Louise, would you like to say something about that briefly?
Sure. Okay. There, is a basic principle that's embedded in the Older Americans Act that says for you to move forward on a complaint, it's not worded this way in the Older Americans Act, but there's that notion of consent, that the ombudsman does not take action or disclose information unless the resident provides consent, either verbal consent or consent in writing. Because we want ombudsmen need to be resident-directed, and the job of the ombudsman is really to work with the residents, gain their trust, and work at their direction. That's all part of empowerment. So in this case, if the resident says, no, I don't want you to do anything, then you do not take action. It is not a case, and you don't have a complaint because the resident doesn't want you to do anything. It might mean you consult with the resident a little more, give a little more information about why she might want the call bell repaired. On your next visit, you may want to check back and just see, check in with her and see if everything's okay, but you don't really have a a case in this situation, because you really can't fix this problem unless you, you know, go forward and talk to the staff. And I guess, you know, there's a lot more that could be said around ombudsman communication techniques and kind of ways to address issues informally, but for the purpose of this training and this question, it would not be a case or a complaint.
Thank you, Louise. And then we had another question. If it's not a case, when would we use permission denied? And I'll take a quick stab at that, and if I'm incorrect, Louise, jump in. I'm thinking permission denied is once you start working on something and then permission's denied to move ahead. And that's more of a disposition kind of issue.
Yeah, and this, you wouldn't have a case and a complaint here, so you wouldn't have a disposition.
Right.
So, you know, again, it could be a consultation.
Right, thank you. Okay, let's move ahead to number four. Amity, would you read that, please?
Your state requires that all allegations of abuse be reported to Adult Protective Services or the police, and that the Ombudsman Program be notified. You receive a routine notification from APS, which is investigating the allegations.
Thank you. Okay, do you want to key in your responses? Okay. Most people say that it's neither a case nor a consultation, although several said it's a consultation and a few said it's a case. Good. That means if there's a spread of opinions, we've correctly nailed some of the issues. It is neither a case nor a consultation. Why? The key hinges on the fact that the Ombudsman Program is not actively involved in investigating and working to resolve the complaint. It says that your state requires that all allegations of abuse be reported to the APS agency or the police, and that the program be notified, the Ombudsman Program be notified. So it's a routine notification. If there are circumstances surrounding that that require that the Ombudsman get involved, or if for whatever reason you go out and get involved in that and begin taking action so that it falls under the definition of case, then it is a case. But at this point, just given the fact scenario right there, you just get a routine notification. So that's not a reason to open a case on it. All right. Let's move to number five, shall we?
Mrs. Oliver asks you to help her obtain the medical records for her mother, who recently died in a nursing home. She is the executor of her mother's will and was her health care durable power of attorney. She is planning to use the records in a private action lawsuit against the facility.
Okay. Response time. Okay, this is kind of mixed results. Just more than half of you say that it's consultation. Almost 16% say it's a case. About 22% say it's neither. And the answer says that it may be a case with one complaint or no case. So several of you got the correct response. And the key is in the discussion and the kind of facts that you bring up as well as your program policies. So, for instance, you would look at for whom the complaint is made. And you also would look at policies on working on cases involving residents who are deceased. And then lastly, you would look at whether the situation could affect other residents, namely their access to records. So, for instance, if you know that Mrs. Oliver's mother is deceased, there may not be anything, any role for the Ombudsman Program that would help other residents in this case. And at that point, you may just give information to Mrs. Oliver about how to get information and access to records, which would be the final point. If it's not a case, it's consultation because you're providing information to her. If it is, if the allegation that Mrs. Oliver has about her mother is something that still could be an issue for other residents, then it may be something that the Ombudsman Program at least looks into to see if there's a role there, if the situation continues, if there are others who may have that issue that then would be complainants and then would be something to take action on. So for this one, you obviously would, whether it's case or consultation or nothing, depends upon what kind of response you make. Louise, is there anything that you wanted to say about that one before we move to the others?
You know, I think this is where, you know, that you have to kind of make judgments based on, again, based on the dialogue. And I would say don't get too hung up on, you know, how do I code this? Just kind of keep it simple. Like, if you just have a conversation and you say, you know, call me back if you have more questions, and basically you give information, you have a conversation, thank you very much, goodbye, then that's a consultation. And that's one way I think of consultations, as you're sharing information and your expertise with somebody. And then I think of the case as the person who has an issue where you can take action. And so that's kind of how I always kind of think of it in my mind. And so in something like this where it is accessing records for a resident who has passed away, it really is going to depend on, are there broader issues at this facility that need addressing, and this can be the vehicle. And if it's the vehicle to address those broader issues, then you would open a case assisting Mrs. Oliver with her complaint about records. So that's how I kind of put this in my head. So.
Great. Thank you, Louise. Okay. Let's move to the next question. Amity, would you read that, please?
A nursing home staff person tells you that Mrs. Smith's son, who has power of attorney for his mother, is verbally abusing Mrs. Smith, using her income for his own purposes, and has not paid her bill for 3 months. The staff person requests your involvement in resolving the non-payment issue.
Thank you. Okay, what do you do with this? What do you call it? Okay, most of you called this one a case, and then some of you called it a consultation, and a few said, neither one applies. So let's see what the answer is. One case, two complaints. And the reason is, the facility staff is a complainant. If the resident is at risk of discharge for non-payment, then a third complaint could be added. So, Shelley or Louise, you want to say anything more about this particular response and quiz and some of the tips around sorting through this answer?
Well, this is Shelley. I'm assuming that the ombudsman's first move is to go check in with Mrs. Smith and see how she wants the ombudsman to proceed. And if this is a resident who can tell you that she does not want the ombudsman to take action, then I would question whether you have a complaint or not.
Yeah, and I think, for these, assuming that, the resident wants assistance, then, again, we have the case regarding Mrs. Smith with the complainant being the facility staff person. But always you have to go back to the resident and see what they think. And it's always fascinating when we get a complaint by someone other than the resident that their perspective can be very different. But all things considered, if this is in fact true and the resident wants assistance, then yes, you've got a case with the two complaints being verbal abuse and financial exploitation. At least that's how it presents. And then from there, again, what makes a case is the ombudsman taking action to resolve the issues. So, again, a case always must represent the resident. There must be problems identified, and they want ombudsman assistance, and the ombudsman has to do something. So those elements are pretty clearly there.
Thank you, Shelley and Louise, for your clarifications. I certainly agree with your responses, and we've had a couple of people chime in that maybe an appropriate thing to do would be to ask the staff if they have followed up with reporting that to Adult Protective Services or whoever it is that follows up with allegations of abuse. And it certainly does seem to me that that would be an appropriate response, because all facilities are required to report incidences of abuse or alleged abuse, and so you would need to know your state's law in terms of what to ask them in that situation. But I think the key to this particular quiz is, what is the role of the ombudsman and whom are you serving? And Shelley and Louise helped clarify that. But the points that some of you listening in have made are certainly on the mark in terms of what good ombudsman practice would be in terms of response to the facility staff person. Okay, let's take a look at
if I could just interject to emphasize that again. It doesn't, you might advise, and you should likely advise, that staff person. Most likely they are a mandatory reporter, and they should do their mandatory reporting. But that doesn't prevent you as the ombudsman from going to the resident and taking further action. And often these kinds of cases often do involve, it could be that kind of joint investigation with APS or licensing. So, that's often, doesn't mean there's not a role for the ombudsman or that you don't have a case.
Really good reminder, Louise. Thank you for making that point. Okay, let's move to number 7. Shelley, would you read this one, please?
Mr. Jones calls the ombudsman program complaining that his mother has a black eye and the facility can give no explanation for it. An ombudsman representative visits his mother and notices light bruises on her face and arms but cannot verify that she had a black eye.
Okay. Let's poll the people on the phone and on the webinar. Okay, it's an overwhelming majority for case. So So let's take a look at this. One case and one complaint. So why is that? Ombudsman open cases whether the complaint can be verified or not. And the complainant is Mr. Jones, the son. So that's how you deal with this. There's one more reminder from Amity. And Amity, since I was going to ask you to read the next one anyway, you want to just make the suggestion that you wanted to point out for the previous question?
Sure. I just wanted to reiterate what Louise was talking about and a couple other comments, that the AOA, or the Older Americans Act confidentiality requirement, actually trumps any state mandates to ombudsmen to report abuse. So just, I know it's mentioned a lot in training, but I thought it wouldn't hurt to mention that again for discussion.
Thanks, Amity, and that helps also clarify the discussion we just had about reminding facilities and facility staff about their legal requirements to report and to whom those reports need to be made, whether it's actual or alleged. And that kind of mandated reporting is different from what an ombudsman may do with that just because of the Older Americans Act requirements and different kinds of provisions. So thank you for that clarification. All right, let's move to with question number eight.
I was going to say one other thing about number seven. And again, just a reminder that, you know, the ombudsman made an initial visit. At that point, couldn't verify anything, but that just because you can't initially verify something doesn't mean you stop or that it's not valid. And so just a reminder that sometimes we can't verify cases, and you'll learn more about that in future trainings, but, you know, it's still you're taking action on this complaint, so it you know, it is a case.
Thank you for that clarification, and it could well be, as I guess everybody on this phone knows, as you go out to verify or see what you can find out about what Mr. Jones reported, you, even though you cannot verify the black eye, you may find that there are other issues there that need to be addressed that maybe contributed to that or maybe did not. But Louise's point is well taken. The ombudsman took action, and that's the key to why this is a case. Okay, number eight. Amity?
Mr. Brown's daughter and guardian, Alice, calls the ombudsman program, concerned that her father is eating all his meals in his room instead of the dining room. You visit Mr. Brown, who seems despondent and is unable to express his wishes. You speak with the DON about Alice's concern. The DON says staff should be taking Mr. Brown to the dining room and that she will discuss the problem with the two new aides and also put a note in his chart. The following week, you call Alice, who tells you the aides are now taking her father to the dining room and he appears much happier.
Thank you. Okay, key in your results. Ooh, unanimous. It is a case with one complaint made by Alice, who's the relative and the guardian. So let's move on to number nine, because I want to keep moving along so that we have time, because I know some of you have questions in related areas. Okay, Shelley?
Miss Miller, a resident of Sunny Valley Assisted Living Facility, stops you in the hall and tells you she has a problem. Her son, who lives at home, has just been terminated from the Medicaid program, and she is concerned he won't be able to pay for his medication. As she wheels off in her wheelchair, you notice that the wheelchair keeps veering to the left and hitting the wall. You ask if she would like your assistance in getting it fixed or getting a new chair, and she replies yes.
Great, thank you. Whoops. So, is this a case, complaint, or consultation? For once, we're going to skip the poll and go straight to the answer. It's one case with one complainant. Mrs. Miller, the resident, is the complainant. Why? It goes back to what we've talked about previously. Even if the ombudsman brings in a problem to the attention of the resident, once the resident says, yes, I want you to work on it, then the resident becomes a complainant because she owns, yes, this is an issue for me and I want you to do something to fix it for me. So sometimes people think that the son's issue may be a consultation or something else. It goes back to you're giving Ms. Miller a little bit of information. So if you gave her quite a bit of information, like who to call, things like that, then you could also count this as consultation. It basically hinges on how much information she wants and how much you give her around Medicaid, or you just mention it, and she may say, well, yeah, he's already working on that and in touch with people. So whether or not it's an additional consultation depends upon the amount of information and the nature of that conversation. But at least it's one case and one complaint. Okay. We are going to skip to question number 10. Amity?
A facility administrator calls you to complain that the volunteer ombudsman assigned to his home is not doing her job. He explains that he called her about a problem the facility was having with a resident's behavior, but she refused to address the facility's concern and instead visited privately with the resident and refused to tell the administrator or the corporation's lawyer about her visit.
Thank you. This is one of my favorites of the whole quiz. Okay, would people just key in what you think this one is? How you would code it in NORS? Okay, we have some splits in the results on this one. And these always make for a good discussion. Most people think it's consultation. There's a hefty number who think it's neither. And some people say, well, yes, it's a case. So let's see what it says. It is not a case. Why? Because it was not made by or on behalf of a resident. It could be a consultation to the facility staff. Or possibly the ombudsman may decide to initiate a complaint on behalf of the resident, depending on what the resident says or what the ombudsman observes. So it goes back to the fact that it hinges on the nature of the interaction between the ombudsman and the resident. But just because the facility administrator is complaining about the ombudsman and the ombudsman not intervening as the administrator thought the ombudsman should, that's not an ombudsman case per se. So you'd need to know some more information before you'd know how to code it or what to do with it. But just on the initial presenting facts that you had, it's not a case. Okay, let's skip to the bonus question, and when we go through this, then we will get to more open dialogue, and some of you may have questions you want us to go back to on the quiz. Amity, would you mind reading this one, please?
Sure. On December 15th, you go to Hilltop Haven to visit Mrs. Lee. Her daughter called you to complain that her mother would like to be bathed more often than once a week. On your way to Mrs. Lee's room, you notice that there is dirty laundry on the floor in the hall and that the hall is dark because several lights are not working. After you visit Mrs. Lee, you stop in to see Mrs. James. She tells you that they stopped her physical therapy and she does not know why, and she complains that the sliding track for the privacy curtain is broken, so it doesn't close all the way. You investigate both complaints. You resolve and close the PT complaint within the week. You learn that the facility has tried to order a new track, but it's on back order. You keep the complaint open until the new track is installed. You go back to visit Mrs. James on January 15th. She tells you that they are installing the track the next day. She also tells you that she just received a notice from the facility saying she will have to switch to the facility pharmacy, even though it may cost more than the pharmacy she's been using for the past 3 years. You tell her you'll check into it for her.
Thank you. So how many cases do you open? Key in your responses or your best guess.
A three-way tie.
Okay, it's almost like a horse race. Let's see what the correct answer is. Now, this one has a caveat in the answer. So some of you who are feeling really smug because you got it right, some of your peers also potentially got it right. But initially, on the surface of it, you open three cases. One, obviously, is for Mrs. Lee, and there's one complaint. You could have an ombudsman-initiated case with two complaints. Why? Because an ombudsman should be the complainant when permission from a resident or resident's representative cannot be obtained, or when permission of the resident is not necessary because numerous residents are affected by the problem, such as a general environmental concern. Now, this opens the door to a lot of good dialogue and information about policies and protecting residents' identity and when you do an ombudsman-initiated complaint and when you don't, when the resident cannot give you consent. But that's well beyond the scope of what this call is designed to address. The third case is Mrs. Hall, and she's a complainant. She's a resident. She has three complaints in her case. Why? It's possible that her pharmacy complaint could be a separate case or complaint. Whether you open one or two cases for Mrs. Hall depends on your state's policy and the amount of time between her complaints. And this is why I said some of you who are feeling smug because it says three cases. Depending on your state's policy, it may turn into be four cases. And then the answer talks about the time differential and when states say you have to open a new case. And basically it hinges upon the amount of time in between dealing with Mrs. Hall's concerns and complaints. So it's basically a judgment call and a state policy call about how many cases you open for Mrs. Hall.
And I just realized I made a goof on the answer sheet. Because I thought the word Mrs. Hall, the name Mrs. Hall, was too confusing when we had complaints in the hall. So I changed it to Mrs. James, but I forgot to change that in the answer section. Switch and replace. I just manually changed it. So, yes, Mrs. Hall is Mrs. James in the question, so we can correct that for the web version. And I think with this one, you know, does Mrs. Hall have one case, three complaints, or two cases, three complaints? It does depend in part on direction from your state ombudsman and the amount of time that's gone between the first two complaints and the last complaint, and where you're at. If you closed out the first two complaints, then you've... you know, you may just be starting all over with a new case and new complaint for that last one. So.
Okay, thank you, Louise. And we'll make those changes and get the correct name so we don't have the who's on first confusion about the answer key. There's another question related to this, though, Louise, that you may want to address, and that's a question about Mrs. Lee, the resident, is one complaint. And the question is, the daughter calls you to complain that her mother would like to be bathed more often than once a week. So why isn't the daughter the complainant?
And, you know, I think in this one, I think we've made an assumption that that the ombudsman has talked to Mrs. Lee and that Mrs. Lee agrees with the daughter's complaint. because say the daughter calls and has this complaint, and you go to Mrs. Lee and she says, oh, my daughter, you know, I get enough baths. She just wants me to, you know, take more showers and more baths, but I don't want that. So then you would not have a case. So that's why we're assuming that the ombudsman has talked to Mrs. Lee and Mrs. Lee agrees she wants action.
Right, and in the bonus scenario, it says after you visit Mrs. Lee. So
yeah.
Obviously the ombudsman has gone in to see Mrs. Lee, but that's a good point in that the daughter called, but the ombudsman went to see Mrs. Lee. So I'm assuming this goes back to the principle that we had in one of these other answers. Once you talk with the resident, if the resident says, yes, I want you to act on that, then the resident becomes the complainant. Is that the principle?
Yes. You want, you know, again, you always want to go to the resident and get their consent, get their direction. Now, of course, there is, if the resident is unable to speak for themselves, then that, you know, that family member is acting on their behalf, you know. You're going to work at their direction on behalf of the resident. So that's kind of that back to that definition of the case. It's working on behalf of the resident. You know, once you verify that indeed you need, that the resident wants direction or the person speaking on behalf of the resident. Yeah.
So let me just say this back to kind of be sure that I understand. Regardless of who calls with the complaint, if the ombudsman goes to talk with the resident, if the resident can tell you what they want and they want you to move forward, you being the ombudsman, then once the resident says, yes, this is an issue for me, do something about it for me, please, then the resident is the complainant. If the resident can't give you any indication but somebody else has called you, a family member or somebody like that, and ask the ombudsman to take action, and the resident can't tell you yes or no, then whoever calls you is the complainant?
I think on the face value, yeah. And again, we don't want to get into, you know, you can get really deep into the weeds on this stuff. So I think one thing to think about is, you know, maybe the daughter calls you, you go see the resident. The resident says, yes, I want your assistance. Who are you working with from that point on? You're really going back and forth with the resident, not necessarily with the daughter, because it's, you know, the resident's issue around bathing or the call light or what have you. And so you're doing your communication ongoing with the resident to resolve that complaint. And the resident may have more details that help inform how you take action on the complaint. You know, I can think of many times when maybe the son or daughter called but said, well, talk to my mom. They'll give you the story, you know, go forth and, you know. And so I think that's, you know, you want to try in working with the resident that, again, at their direction. And I would say also, you know, we don't want to get too bogged down in this at some point. We have to move forward, work on the case. There's always a judgment call here. But if you're doing your communication with the resident, that is your complainant. And we're seeing some disagreement on this one, so...
Louise, this is Shelley. One of the things I was thinking was, as the investigation progressed, if the resident said, stop, okay, that's enough, or the resident would be in charge of
mm-hmm.
that investigation, where mm-hmm. if the daughter who had initially filed the complaint called in and said, okay, stop, never mind, I've changed my mind, I'm not sure if indeed we had gotten the resident's permission and it was an issue for the resident, we would continue. So it's sort of who's calling the shots. So to me, that would mean that it is the resident who's to whom we're reporting or responding to or working for in this situation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's where we didn't really get into the detailed discussion of who is a complainant and the complainant definitions. And so, you know, again, for the purposes of today, we're looking at mostly what is a case, what is a complaint, what is a consultation. And so, you know, I don't want us to get too bogged down in some of these other finer points that, you know, because we will have three more trainings and more opportunity to, you know, go further into these discussions. And so, you know, I think that's, you know, kind of where we want to start. And again, you know, I'm just kind of thinking about this here. Excuse me. I think what Shelley says resonates in terms of who's calling the shots, and that's a big part of it. You know, and I think maybe, as I think this through, do we maybe need to discuss this more in the next training, do some more clarification. So.
Thank you. This has been a really good discussion, and I'm thinking that it is something to review in terms of the definition complainant in the future and anything that we can do around the modules to try to clarify that. Nevertheless, the definition of complainant in the NORS instruction is something that we will be living with at least until the current set of instructions goes away at some point in 2012. But it certainly makes us think more clearly about on whose behalf are we working. So this may be something that we develop a guidance on or any additional clarification that still would be consistent with current NORS instructions. So maybe something for the week, as Shelley's indicated a little bit to us already, could take up and take another look at with Louise and others. And then we could send something out if we have something developed. So that gets us right into where we wanted to go next. And that is questions. And I know several of you have questions. And one of the things that we've been reminded of is these NORS training modules certainly are the basics and are developed and intended to focus on just key kinds of pieces of NORS, like today's call was case, complaint, consultation, how do you know one from the other, and a lot of it is it depends. So the pieces around what do you do, it gives you an opportunity to really look at your policies, but also to go back to the definition of case, complaint, and consultation. Before we do anything further, I want Becca to chime in and just remind people about the process for asking a question, because we've got several minutes now, a good 15 minutes, when we can have some other kinds of questions that may relate to the quiz that we've just covered and the answers. And please, if you are not understanding or have a disagreement with the answer that's presented, please chime in and ask that. And then others of you have related kinds of questions where it's not real clear to you or there's some disagreement among the ranks about whether it's case or consultation or neither. So now's the time to ask that question as well. Becca, would you just tell people how to let us know if they have a question?
Sure, Sarah. So if you press *7 on your phone, that will unmute your line if you have a question. We just ask that after you've asked your question, if you could hit *6 to remute your line to keep the background noise to a minimum. You can also continue to either raise your hand or type questions into the chat box. So, again, it's *7 to unmute your phone line and *6 to remute it.
And this is Louise. Before, just a quick summary I wanted to mention just, when you think of this, again, it's the case is your person, resident, or group of residents that you're assisting to take action on their complaints, and it always involves action. and then your consultation is just that sharing information with somebody, whether it's staff or residents, family, what have you. And I guess I want to stress that the kind of direction of the resident is critical in this process, and or if the resident can't speak for themselves, then their representative. And interestingly, when you look at the data, the top two complainants are resident is first and family or relative is second. So that's pretty much consistent in my recollection. That's kind of how it shakes out, and that's the bulk of our complaints come from those two groups. So just as a kind of to keep that in mind.
All right. Thank you, Louise. Patty, you've had your hand up for a while, and then I see that we have a question from the chat room, and then we'll go back to some of the others who have their hands up. So, Patty?
Hi, this is Patty and Cheryl calling from Texas. So we were wondering, we struggle a bit about what instruction you would recommend if an ombudsman begins giving information, consultation, in response to a question, but that person comes back later and wants us to have more direct involvement and we need to open a case. I have thought that, I've told ombudsman in the past that I think that's one situation where you can, on the same issue, report a consult that you provided and have a case that you opened and worked. Do you think that's consistent with Nora's training?
Louise, you're the answer person on this
I'm
call.
Looking back to your original question. So they have, I think part of it is sequencing. So let's see. They come back later and want more direct ombudsman involvement. I think if it's all in the course of one visit, then you're just going to have a case with the complaint. But if
okay,
you...
Okay, I was thinking of more time passing than not
I
on
think
the
if more time passing, then you have a consultation, and then 2 weeks later you're back. You know, maybe the residents thought about it or tried to do some things on their own. It didn't work, and they want your active involvement. So you had an initial consultation, and then you would have your case with the complaint. So I would say with that passage of time makes the difference there.
Okay. And can I also ask a follow-up to that?
Yeah.
I was thinking it would be safe to say that once you've opened a case, that you shouldn't then be adding in consultation that's related to the same issue, even if that's to a facility staff and not the individual, because it seems like you've opened a case, you've already identified you've got at least one complaint, and so you shouldn't be counting any consultations after you've done that. Is that accurate?
Yeah, specific to that issue, yeah. So if it's related to, let's say, food services, so all your discussions are around food services towards resolving the complaint, then yes, you don't have any consultations. It's all your complaint work.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. We also had a question from the chat from Shannon. Help me understand why in the scenarios getting the call light fixed is a case, but if we went to the director of nursing to get pain medication to get someone covered up or something like that, it would only be seen as an assistance, asking for assistance and not a case.
Well,
actually, this is Shannon. I just typed it in because I thought it would be easier.
did you want to?
Well, just, Shelley's, I know Shelley's on the call and we've had a lot of discussion, the difference between action versus assistance. And I know in the initial slides when you were talking about what really constitutes a case, we're talking about, you know, investigating it. You know, in the scenario of a broken call light, in the scenarios that you gave, the broken call light, we went to the DON, we made them aware they're working on fixing it. While that's a case, and I would agree that's a case, then I just want to be sure and clear that then if we're asking a DON for pain medication or, I mean, a myriad of different things that oftentimes the ombudsman will be asked to do, you know, and maybe, again, we could take our skills a little further and look at if it's more of a systemic type issue.
Mm-hmm.
But why then would that not be considered a case? Rather, that would just be assistance versus actually taking action.
Well, and I think
this is, Louise, sorry, I'm going to, this is Sarah, jump in and just remind people that we are near the end of the call. So I think we're going to have the Cliff Notes version of the answer, and
yes,
then we can instruct people about what to do with these other questions that have come in that are kind of hanging out there. So go for it, Louise.
Well, I think the key point is you're not investigating, you're delivering a message in that case of where you just get immediate help for the resident, like I need a blanket, you find someone, get the resident a blanket. But, you know, again, if you, every time you visit, you see residents are not getting care, then you would probably open a case maybe on behalf of a group of residents. So it's part of that is are you just delivering a message? And if you're just delivering a message, you're not doing any investigation. You're not doing any follow-up.
Then I guess that's where I'm confused, because in the scenario, you're just bringing it to the DON's attention.
Well,
and it's promptly fixed. However, that was coded as a complaint under the case.
I think the other piece of that was, it was, let me look at the thing again here. It was fixed, but the ombudsman had to check back the next week to make sure it really was still fixed. And so we tried to add that extra little piece that there was some additional follow-up to make sure that it was still actually fixed.
So then if we were, say, to get somebody pain medication and you know, we were to leave and go continue our visit and then we were to follow it back with the resident to ensure they got it, then would that constitute a case versus just requesting assistance?
If there's, I think in that the question might be to the resident, is this an ongoing problem? Do you need assistance to get this kind of permanently fixed? Or is it, again, are you just delivering a message? So, you know, that it might be that you do some extra probing and you turn it into a case. But, again, on the face value of that, just all you're doing is delivering a message, it's not a case. So just looking at it at the face value. You may determine it needs more attention, and the resident agrees because it's an ongoing problem, and then it becomes a case. But just for the face value it's of delivering a message, it's not.
So it's just a matter of documenting then further, the further steps we take, if we take any.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
And that was a good question, Ms. Sarah. I think for a lot of these answers and making the discrimination between case, complaint, consultation, or just being the messenger, it has to, a lot of the key hinges upon what you see right here is action needed by or on behalf of residents. And then I think the primary determinant is what action is taken by the ombudsman. Are you just conveying a message and you look back down the hall and the lights off? Or are you checking to see, are there other residents who also have that issue with their call light? Is there a systemic process that needs to be fixed? Is it something that is going to take a while and then you have to come back and do the follow-up? So a lot of it hinges upon the nature of the ombudsman action that fits the category of investigation, strategy to resolve, and follow-up, and the kind of discrimination. I know some of you have questions. Others have really good comments. I'm sorry we are out of time. What I want to do is encourage you to email us. You can email Shelley. You can email Louise. You can email the Resource Center, me, with your questions and comments. We will funnel those to the WINC and have some discussion, dialogue, input from AOA. And we will have the results to post and share with other people. So in that way, we will have the answer. Somebody asked about the PowerPoint. Yes, we will post this PowerPoint on the Ombudsman Resource Center website along with
Sarah.
The questions and quiz.
It's already
posted
on the website. I'll go ahead and send a link out to that in the chat box right now.
Great. Thank you. So the PowerPoint's already up. The next call on part two is the 29th. And I hope that you see from just this experience today how vital it is to do this training, even if you use the same quizzes every so often in your states, not just with new staff people, because it really does open a fertile dialogue for good ombudsman practice, clarifying what goes where, asking questions, and really looking at what you want people to be doing. And all in all, it helps gain a little more consistency from state to state and within each state. We do have a session at Consumer Voice on how to teach these modules, and that session will not be teaching the modules, but it will be your best practice tips on how to keep people awake and engaged. We'll send a follow-up to you for feedback on this call, and we would really like constructive comments so that we can improve the next time around. Thank you for giving us your time today and for joining in and enriching the dialogue that we've had. Please send us your comments and questions that we didn't get to. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please stand by.